We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man, happy Monday. Are you upset that he's not there? I'm not. I'm actually surprised he went to the other voluntary workout, but Kirk Cousins was not present at the start of Falcons OTAs today, organized team activities. It is voluntary. And for some of you, you say, well, what's the big deal? As I said, earlier last month, he decided to show up at voluntary workouts, and everybody said, is he here? Is he here? And everybody was like, yeah. Offensive coordinator talked about it. You know, everybody was asking about him, but nobody really saw him or talked to him. But he was not in attendance today, Mike. Does this mean he's now trying to start forcing his hand when it comes to I want out?
Right. I mean, look, at the end of the day, he has all the leverage.
He does.
I mean, it's a guaranteed contract. There's no takers unless somehow, some way, and we'll talk about this in a second, Aaron Rodgers doesn't land in Pittsburgh. But, yeah, I mean, he demanded a trade, or whether he asked. I don't know how that conversation went with Arthur, but he spoke to Arthur for an hour. Arthur took notes, and apparently he wanted to be traded to a team that's in the playoff hunt without a quarterback being drafted over his shoulder. Good luck with that. Either way, we were under the impression, we talked to some NFL players, at least I had heard that, you know, part of your contract, and Randy Mack had mentioned it, is you got to be X amount of mini camp and team activities. You got to be there to get your contract or not. Because now maybe this is just simply a leverage move and he's going to simply sit out. Either way, I'd rather have him not there. Let Michael Penix Jr. be the man and run the whole show.
If you heard my conversation, it's online at 92.9 The Game with our assistant general manager, Kyle Smith, last week. The Falcons have not budged on their message of he's here as a backup. If something comes about that interests us as far as potentially doing something, we will look at it. But, Mike, when we say they haven't budged, we're talking about the money they're asking for. And here's my question. If you really want to move on from the situation, don't you budge on that? Don't you just come off of, all right, look, we're going to lose some money on this deal. It's just what it is. But we clear ourselves of this entire situation. That's where I'm kind of lost and perplexed about, because the Falcons have not budged on this.
Right. And remember, it was 2 months back, and it was before the draft. And I was reading that Bill Barnwell article that said, you'll be lucky if you get $5 million. Some team to give you $5 million. You have to eat everything. You have to eat $32 million, and maybe somebody throws you a bone like a 6th round pick. Because there's the Bleacher Report article, and we'll talk about the Steelers thing. Aaron Rodgers, still not a Steeler. The owner, Rooney, about 2 weeks ago, talking to some Steeler fans on an online forum, said he still believed they were going to be patient. Aaron Rodgers would be a Steeler quarterback. Well, if he isn't, the only place we've ever thought we'd have any juice for would be the Steelers to give Kirk Cousins a trade. Kirk Cousins, though, as you said, Carl, he doesn't have to budge. He's got a non-trade clause. And then the article at Bleacher Report says, look, if the Falcons would just back off this, you know, you've got to give us $25 million thing, which no one's going to give you. And they said, look, if this was, let's say, hey, give us $7 or $8 million, we'll do a deal. They said the deal would have been done before the draft.
I agree. It would have, because it's reasonable. And you're still eating a majority of the money. I mean,
but maybe you can throw in a sweetener, like a draft pick of some sort. Nothing high, of course.
No,
but just eat it and get them off the books. Let's move on.
They'd be paying Cousins a guaranteed $27.5 million in 2025, even if he's released, which is what I've talked about. That June 1st designation, and we're almost there. Like this is the week where things are going to heat up a little bit, and you start to say, okay, are we moving on this? Either way, that was part of our conversation today as we came in. Thanks for listening to Atlanta's number one sports station, its number one sports show. Now, Kyle Pitts was also not there. Ray McLeod, Caleb McGarry, there are others. But this is really the story. Let's be honest. The Kyle Pitts thing, Mike asked me if it bothered me. Yeah, because I want him to get his most reps. But Kyle Pitts has been to OTAs. This is going into his fifth year. He knows the routine. I just need him to show up. The story is really, why did Kirk Cousins decide to show up earlier for volunteer workouts, and now he doesn't? That's why I brought that up to begin with. And I said, this doesn't make sense. If you want out, I'm not showing up for Jack. I don't give a damn what you guys want me to do. I don't care about these roster bonuses if they are included in my contract. I want out. So I'm not showing up. I'll see you guys when we get to the table and you say I'm out of here. That's what should have happened. But instead, he was trying to play the nice guy, and he's in the building and everybody's talking about it. Now we start OTAs, and these other guys are being reported that they weren't there. And again, what Mike and I don't know is, vacations. Who knows? They may have permission. Right. Who knows? But the Cousins thing is the one, because as a quarterback, you should be at all of these things.
And that's certainly, you know, what we would normally say about a quarterback relationship with a starting. But now with Penix, I just want Penix to have all the reps.
Me too.
All the juice, you know, get some journeyman to come in and back him up, and let's roll. And let's hope that Aaron Rodgers, who said some really crazy stuff the other day, continues to maybe, I don't know, alienate the Steelers. If the Steelers have a date in mind, I don't know, the start of camp. You know, I wouldn't expect Aaron to be at the OTAs. That's beneath him. Of course, he's got to go see the pyramids. But this will be interesting to see, you know, because the only place really we could go other than, and I said this to Carl earlier, kind of strange how Minnesota has kind of always kept the door open a crack for Aaron Rodgers to be a Viking, you know. So, you know, the general manager's talked about it. The coach is on record with it. You know, what's J.J. McCarthy going to do? He's got no leverage. He's got to eat it if they bring Aaron Rodgers in. So we'll see. But I would love Kirk Cousins to not be here as soon as, you know, next week, or certainly no later than the first, you know, week of camp. So let the man do his thing. But you're right. If they got a letter of permission, if the coaches cleared it with guys who weren't there today, that's great. But hearing that Kyle Pitts wasn't there did kind of raise my eyebrows, because Kyle Pitts is in a contract year, literally and figuratively, whether he wants to play football with the Falcons or with somebody else, you'd think that, you know, you'd want to have all the reps,
I guess.
Raheem Morris. But yeah, but if he's got an excused absence, that's completely legit.
Raheem Morris did speak to the media guys, and he said a couple of different things. The last thing he said, which is the most interesting to me, because, look, we can talk about the team and where we need to grow as guys play certain positions and the production we need. Where does he grow? But before we get to that, Raheem talked about how the perspective has changed as a defensive coach, and that's what his background is, obviously. He has coached offense, which gives him the whole perspective. But he says, you know, the NFL's a passing league now, and how has his perspective and certainly defensive coaches changed? Listen.
It's a passing league, Josh. Yes, that was a very creative way of wording that to me, to make me go against everything Monty Kiffin taught me from birth, and Rod Marinelli and all those guys. But it is for sure a passing league, and you got to be able to stop the pass. You got to be able to rush the passer and do a bunch of those different things. You still got to find ways to stop run downs. I think probably a couple of years ago, most people call it normal D&D or run downs. I think I was here with Dirk Cutter, and we talked about being a certain percentage and being able to move the ball efficiently on run downs. So you want to be able to throw those off of track so you can get to your change downs or your get back on tracks or whatever verbiage you want to use. You want to get them to those extra third downs to be able to make it a passing league. So the more you can do that, the better you will be. So, like, there's still an element of stopping the run. It's just not always run now. It's just kind of normal D&D when you're talking about the play action game. You're talking about the runs that come off from the keepers, all of those type of things that happen in normal D&D, or what we refer to sometimes as rundowns, are the things you want to be able to stop and be able to negate so you can get to those known pass situations so you can absolutely unleash some of the young pass rushers and some of your old pass rushers that get after the quarterback.
I think the thinking of how you attack some of these offenses, and first of all, you got to have the personnel to do it. Have we improved our personnel? Yes. I've said this on defense. Speed got better. Athleticism got better. We're younger. There are certain things that you look at our defense now, drafting two safeties and, you know, two defensive backs and certainly the edge guys with what we already have and the guys that we have coming back, you feel better about it. But you got to have the dudes to do it. But the perspective is, how do I attack these offenses? And that's what he's getting into and saying, hey, my mindset has changed, and it should be, because the league is completely different than what it was when I started coaching.
He's certainly a good defensive coach. We saw the defense get better when he took over for Jimmy Lake. We know that. He gets pass rush. If he had some input into those guys they drafted the last few years of the Rams, then I believe in what we're doing with these guys we brought in. We don't know what the number's going to be. We talked earlier about the projections of what you expect from Jalen Walker, you know, and what you're going to get from James Pierce Jr. But one thing for certain, with Leonard Floyd in the mix, how they're going to, don't forget, Caden Ellis is still on this team. Maybe, you know, we get some double digits. If we get some Micah Parsons-like production out of Jalen Walker, I don't think it's too much to ask for based on everything pre-draft and everything Georgia fans know was said about him. But, man, I'm curious. I'm excited about this defense. Secondary benefits from it. Secondary's taking its lumps because he has no pass rush. Yeah. There's no heat.
Hey, my only thing about that is, Mike, and we got plenty of time to chop this up, and we'll see him at camp and all of that. He's just not a pure pass rusher. He's a playmaker.
Right.
That's the difference with Jalen Walker, which is why Mykael Williams, right, and the conversation we had about him, you can use him in all these different places. And, yes, he's going to be off the edge because that's what they want him to master. But that's not what he does. Like that, that's what James Pierce does. He comes off the edge, he creates pressure. That's why they said he's going to do what he's been doing. The Walker or the Jalen Walker thing is more interesting. All right, Raheem Morris, what about those pass rushers? What are they doing in OTAs, Mike, and what do they need to be trying to do?
I just think they got to continue to get better with their individual, you know, how we practice, what the practice is for, why is this called jog through? What is the purpose of this jog through? What is the purpose of this OTA day practice and my lanes and my mentality and all those type of things? Then we get the individual, you get to see some of the effort things that come out that you're going to try to translate once you get to training camp. So really up front, it's just a learning practice for the rookie rushers and really all of the rookies on how we practice, what we're doing it for. The player education development piece of it just continues to grow on being a part of this culture and being a part of this team.
Okay. And that's fine. I mean, look, you got to know the ropes before you can go mm-hmm. full speed. Let's figure it out. Let's learn. It's a learning period. It is OTAs. We'll get to mandatory minicamp here, you know, coming up next month. And then once that happens, guys, once that gets done, we take a break. And then we come back and it's camp. And I know you guys are like, well, summer just started. It's going to be here before you know it. And all of a sudden, we'll be getting ready for preseason games and talking about this upcoming season. So I'm excited to see the growth of what those guys, specifically the edge rushers, are going to do.
Right. And as we said, discussed it earlier, because ESPN on an NFL article talking about, you know, what are the projections. They've got Mykal Williams getting 6 sacks. They got Jalen Walker getting 6 sacks. We said this earlier. I mean, this isn't Arnold Ebiketie we're talking about. The comparisons are Micah Parsons. And as you said, he is a guy that they're expecting him to be a guy that can do that off the edge. He's a tremendous athlete. He can basically do everything. When he drops back in coverage, you're not going to roll your eyes, okay, like other guys who've had that same effort and been asked to do that for the Falcons. But I just think, man, you didn't move heaven and earth to get Pierce, and certainly people, critics will be saying of the trade, well, aha, I mean, you got to have some juice. Question is, you know, people forget we do have Leonard Floyd on this team. We do have, who was the other guy we got from the Chargers? We got that, that guy. We got other guys on edge rush. We have a bunch of bodies. We have Caden Ellis. So we do have some dudes. Hold on, remember we were joking around about the guy we picked up from the Chargers, and we're like, who's that guy?
You talking about the Raiders linebacker?
No. This is. Oh, I'll find it. Apologize, Morgan Fox.
Oh, gotcha.
Because I don't know Morgan Fox from Adam before we got him, but he's other. No, and the other linebacker you talked about, Divine Diablo.
Yeah.
So these are all guys in the rotation, but I mean that's why maybe. Okay, I'll say they don't have to have 10 sacks, but the team will be in the top third of the NFL as far as getting the quarterback down.
One last thing. It's not just about the team. It's about the personal growth of the head coach. Raheem Morris and personal improvement. Here's what he said about what he needs to do as he's going through this process of getting ready for the next season.
The number one thing is being able to identify problems faster. Right. So like when we can identify those problems faster and not waiting so long to fix them, I think that's something that I can do better personally. And I think that's something that we all can really do. But like when you're the head coach and you're overseeing all the different things, you got to be able to see those things a little bit faster to be able to make some of those corrections. We're able to fix a lot of things on offense quickly. We're able to fix a lot of things on defense. Didn't do as quickly as you wanted to do them. You're able to fix a bunch of things across the board and how you wanted to do things. So I think being able to identify problems really a bit quicker and to be able to put your imprint and stamp on them. Or if you don't have the answers, to be able to go find ways to go find those answers within the organization, within your building, outside the building, whatever it takes to be able to go get those things done. So I'm always fried up for that learning curve of everything. That always interests me. That's something I always love. You definitely have a process, but it's definitely steadily growing and learning every time you go out there and do anything that you do within this game.
I like that. I'll say this. Part of that identifying problems faster is he trusted somebody that he didn't have to last year, and that was Jimmy Lake. And then when he got to the point in the season, Mike, where it was like, okay, I got to get involved, mm-hmm. we know that we saw a jump on the defensive side of the football. But you're supposed to trust your coaches. The fact is, he just wasn't ready for it.
Right. And, I mean, some of that learning curve's also got to be clock management. I mean, there was a couple of times. The other thing, and I know this is getting off in the weeds, Carl, is how aggressive Raheem Morris was, and then he stopped being that aggressive coach, like the Minnesota game. Fourth down, right side of the 50, not going for it. The clock management, the Commanders. Yeah, if he self-scouts that, to take a phrase from Mike Smith, hopefully we get better in that area. Kirk Cousins not there. We mentioned Pitts, Caleb McGarry, Ray McLeod. So we don't know if those were excused absences. Certainly we know that we don't know the Cousins one was an excused absence.
All right, coming up, we're going to talk to Grant McCauley. Guys, Braves have a big series against the Phillies tonight at Strider. What's going on with this team? Felt like we should have won that series, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't. Against the Padres. It's Dukes and Bell. Grant McCauley is here as we go around the yard. We get ready for a Philly series that we need to win. But before we get to that, Grant, let's talk about the good. of the weekend. And the good was Ronald Acuna. Man, he looked great. First player, by the way, to hit a home run after missing 150 games or more to lead off with a home run. What can you say about Ronald's return? Because that was certainly the good.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. And I found that stat to be fascinating because there are sometimes, even as a baseball person, I look at something and I read it and I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. And I read it again and I'm like, huh. And I read it a third time and I'm like, who comes up with this stuff? But no, it's a great thing to see. And it certainly was high drama and great cinema and all those things. And just the validation or reminder that Ronald Acuna Jr. can change a game, impact a game with one swing. That's what he does. That's who he is. And that's what the Braves need right now. So that was definitely the good of the weekend against the Padres. I thought the starting pitching was good as well. Obviously, there were some bullpen problems. And outside of Ronald Acuna Jr. for two out of those 3 days, there were some offensive problems as well. So it's just putting all of the different facets of the game together that the Braves have struggled with at times this year. Obviously, we know they're better than the team from the first week. It's starting to feel further and further and further away. But then you get through a week like this one where you drop a couple against the Nationals that you feel like you should have won at least one of those. And then the series against the Padres, not only was it winnable, it was sweepable. And the Braves just weren't able to get the hits they needed, score the runs they needed, and as the case may be, keep the Padres at bay.
I know that we've gone over this before, but I'll ask you again. It looks like Iglesias has lost it. You know, I mean, when guys are on base with errors or in, sometimes the stats don't tell you the entire story, but he just gives up too many big flies. It just seems like he's just not a guy you can trust right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big problem is the home run, and that's a huge problem to have when you're the person in charge of the last three outs with the slimmest of margins. I talked about this on From the Diamond, and I feel like it's one of the stats that really underscores the Braves' season this year. They have played the most one-run games in baseball by a fairly good margin. It's either four or five games. They have played 22 one-run games to this point. They are 9-13 in those one-run games. Iglesias has four losses this year. He's blown three saves. Clearly, we can do the math and feel like, you know, where that would have fit in the kinds of games he's supposed to be pitching in. So it doesn't add up to the most calming influence, if you will, in the ninth inning. But I think that their options are limited when it comes to switching those duties over. I did ask Brian Snitker point blank about this in the recent homestand. I mean, how do you bring somebody along with this and what effect does it have on basically every other bullpen decision you make? Because, Mike, if you don't trust him in the ninth,
right,
can you trust him in the eighth inning? Can you trust him in the seventh? Like, he's just got to make the adjustments, and to bring it home to something he can actually fix, he can stop hanging sliders. That's his big issue. He's given up seven homers this year. Five of them are on the slider. His slider has been put in play, I believe, nine times this year. Seven of those times it's been a hit. Five of them have gone over the wall. That seems to be the problem pitch for him. And Snit basically said that's got to be adjusted. Clearly that's an issue. He throws four pitches, and his sinker, his changeup are great pitches for him in addition to a four-seam fastball. So if he wants to stay away from that pitch for a while, at least until he gets more comfortable with it, I think that's a pretty obvious and quick fix for him to maybe start to get some scoreless appearances, some confidence, and also give everybody else the opportunity to take a deep breath in the ninth inning in a one-run game.
What's going on with Austin Riley? Five in his past 15, four at Truist. We're talking about eras. It doesn't even sound or feel right for me to be talking about this because this is not who we've become to know or you know, gotten to know as far as Austin Riley and his fielding. What do you think's going on?
No, I mean, sometimes you just kind of go through a rut, I think, fielding the same way you can in the box. I mean, it's the same, I think, general premise there. But obviously, the batted ball can do a lot of different things, and misplays are going to happen. I mean, Austin is not a guy who's, you know, going to make every single play every single time, but he's better than he's been lately. And that, I think, is the big takeaway here. So I don't really think there's anything wrong with him. Now, is there something tricky or wrong about the surface? I'm not 100% sure. I'd want to go with that as the final answer to everything. But as long as Truist Park has been around, I had heard at times different guys saying, you know, we don't like this infield. It's not giving us true hops. And I say this, you know, being opposing teams, not so much the home team. But one thing I had seen and been told and pointed out by a couple of different people was how the ball hits the grass and moves in the outfield once it gets down. That's a little bit unnatural from how it is in other ballparks on other types of grass, I guess. I'm not an expert on the turf. I'm not going to pretend to play one on the radio or TV. But I do think that, you know, Austin is better than these plays would indicate here lately. and I think he's going to have better days ahead. But as far as the comments about the grounds crew or the grounds themselves, I would tend to abstain from that because everybody's having to play on the same field. So you just kind of have to take what you're given sometimes. And unfortunately for him, it may have just been given a few bad hops lately.
What's up with Money Harris? I mean, he's batting 207 for the month of May. We know the fielding is, again, if you get into the wins above replacement, the fielding does compensate. But Grant, I'm just looking at the numbers, 3 doubles for the entire month. You know, I mean, I know the stolen base, that's really not his thing, but it's just like, is he just going to be a 225 hitter? Because that's not the guy you give the contract to.
No, and I don't think that he is fully a 225 hitter, but we have seen over the last at least 3 seasons, if you want to go ahead and lump this one in, a guy who's starting very slowly and then heating up as the weather does and having a better second half. He did it in the final couple of months last year. He did it in the final 3+ months of 2023. Obviously, his rookie season was a different story, but no, the guy that you're seeing right now is not the output that they were hoping from the guy they gave the contract to. But, you know, I think it comes down to really swing decisions for him, plate discipline, a lot of things that I see from him, maybe an over-aggressiveness at times. And those are things you can adjust, but it can be challenging to get that job done. So as far as what's going on with him, I think maybe it's just a little bit of over-aggressiveness that's kind of compounding the issues that are going on. But the swing choices, not getting outside of the zone as much as he has at times this year, I think would help out. Just getting more dialed in. That seems to be really what he's working on, what he's trying to get to. It just hasn't happened yet.
Grant McCauley, we're going around the yard. Braves and Phillies tonight start a 3-game series. Let's talk about these pitching matchups. It's going to be pretty good matchups. I mean, Suarez, Strider, Smith, Sharver, Wheeler. I mean, they've got some really good pitchers they're throwing, ironically, you know, for this series. Wheeler, though, has been on another level. What do we expect to get from the guys that we're throwing out there and Strider specifically tonight?
Well, I know what we need to see from Spencer Strider, and that, of course, is a start that makes him feel a little bit more like himself again. That's been an issue for him. Obviously, you know what you can expect out of Chris Sale, and hopefully he's able to do that in the as well. And it's going to be a big test for A.J. Smith-Shawver as well. But specifically for Spencer Strider, I think it's just going to be about establishing that strike zone. He's had a little bit of wildness. I mean, when I looked at that start this last time out, he pretty much filled up every column, and that is not really the goal when you go out there. You'd like to keep as few hits in that column and keep the ball in the yard, limit the walks, and pile up the strikeouts. But it was wild pitches, errors, you know, just bad plays and things that hit batsmen, stuff that, you know, was not helping him out. So I think, you know, maybe in hindsight, after a month of having to work his way back, maybe a rehab start would have been in order, just given everything else from the previous 12 months of trying to get him back and, you know, not skipping that step. But that's all hindsight now. Hopefully he's knocked the rust off in the last start, and he'll feel a little bit more like himself now with at least one under his belt since coming off the IL.
Grant, we were talking about this earlier. We took 2 out of 3 from the Phillies back in April, but it just seems like, you know, I don't know if they're going to put extra pressure on themselves, but, you know, you could come out of this thing being 11 games back if you don't watch it.
Yeah, you could. And that is some math that you don't want to be having to do while you're out trying to get the job done. But it is the reality of their situation. So I think for the Braves, you look at back when they took that 2 out of 3 from the Phillies, Atlanta had struggled mightily out of the gate there. That was, I believe, the Braves' first series win of the year. Phillies lately, though, have been on a heater. They've been one of the best clubs, if not the best record in baseball over the last 3+ weeks, have a nice long winning streak that they've carried to get them to the top of the National League East standings as the Mets have kind of faded back down. But there's a lot of baseball left to be played. That being said, you've got 10 more head-to-head matchups with the Braves and the Phillies this year. If you want to take a bite out of an 8.5-game lead that the Phillies hold or want to avoid turning it into an 11-game deficit, you got to keep winning these series and taking advantage of these head-to-head opportunities.
No doubt. Grant, thank you so much. We'll see what happens tonight. Hopefully we can handle business. Should be a great series here up there in Philly. Grant McCauley, thanks again.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah, man, good stuff from him. More to get to, including what Kirby Smart is saying he, along with other SEC coaches, want. They are having the annual spring meetings down in Florida. We'll tell you about that coming up on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Kirby Smart and the rest of the SEC coaches trying to get on the same page. It's Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. The annual SEC meetings are going on down in Florida. Kirby was asked today about some clarity. He wants clarity on the future of the NCAA transfer portal. So this is just from the coach's standpoint, and we'll talk about Greg Sankey here in a second, and we'll play the Greg Sankey soundbite. that Mike and I were talking about earlier. But this is the big story, guys, because this is the future of college football. And they're trying to rewrite some rules, not just with the SEC. We're talking about across the board. The SEC is going to lead the way. But there are two portals right now. One in December, at the end of the regular season, December 9th to the 28th. And then there's one in the spring, right? We saw this. Spring game happened, and then guys like, oh, I don't know, Nico decides to transfer because, oh, well, I'm not getting what I want. April 16th to the 25th. Kirby and a lot of the SEC coaches, Mike, want one transfer portal is what they're looking to do. And then they're saying, hey, we want that portal in April or May, not at the end of December or in the middle of December. And then let's have an OTA-style practices in June, which is what the Falcons are trying to, you know, do right now. So kind of a pro-style approach to this. But Smart does not like the idea and says, you know, Georgia uses 10 days in June to hold camps, and it's a key recruiting and evaluation time. So the timing of what he wants and when they want it, this is some of the stuff they're working out, or at least attempting to talk about down there.
There's a lot of stuff going on. A lot of people felt. Did you feel that Sankey overflexed when he was asked the question?
Yes.
About, you know, where the state of college football is. And hypothetically, it's kind of like when Charlie Sheen asked Gordon Gekko, how many yachts can you water ski behind? Because basically the argument is, you know, couldn't you take a little less off the top to keep the game alive as opposed to just being Pac-Man and continue to gobble up? Because that's where I think they're going to go anyway. And look, if the Big Ten and the SEC align, then everybody else is dead in the water anyway. Because you'll have the juice and the TV contracts coming at you to go gobble up the cast-offs of the ACC and the Big 12.
No doubt. No doubt. And by the way, let's play the soundbite because Sankey was asked a bunch of things. But to Mike's point, it's not what he said. It's how he said it. And if you didn't see the video or his response – to Mike's point, it was almost like, hold on, let me puff my chest out a little bit here. Let me explain to you guys who you're talking to. I am the commissioner of the SEC. And he started to basically lay it out like, hey, I don't care about what's going on with these other conferences. Here's one of the things that Sankey said.
Look at a track record. We didn't need 12. Did we say to four, we would have had half the four last year. I don't need lectures from others about good of the game. I don't lecture others about good of the game. And coordinating press releases about good of the game. Okay, you can issue your press statement, but I'm actually looking for ideas to move us forward.
He's talking about the Big 12, who issued a press statement talking about the same thing that I said. What's good for college football? We cannot be solely focused on what's good for our conference when we're talking about the reshaping of college football. The problem is, it's not a problem, Mike. Let me ask you, is Greg Sankey willing to be the bad guy? Is he willing to say, I don't care if you blame me for how we're about to reshape this. I'm willing to take on that responsibility, and I'm willing to be the guy, the face of this, the front man, because you are, in fact, in charge of, at least in our opinion, the most important conference in college football. Now, Big Ten fans will say, look, we got a better TV contract. You do right now, but if the SEC and when the SEC goes to nine games, you won't, because they're going to get a big chunk of money for adding that content. So is he willing to do that and do exactly what he said? I don't care about all this other stuff. I'm here to take ideas.
Yeah, I mean, how do you fix? I mean, everybody wants this thing to be fixed. If you have Greg Sankey taking this position, you really do need Nick Saban to be the, you know, this football czar. I mean, like, I know Trump ran something up the flagpole. I guess that's kind of dying on the vine. But there's really no, if you're looking for like logic or people who have the best interest of the sport, that cavalry isn't coming over the hill. Those guys don't exist. And again, as you said earlier, Sankey's job is to put as much money in the coffers of the Georgias and the Ole Misses and everybody else in the member schools and the Texases and the Oklahomas and the SEC.
That's right.
But you'd like to think someone would see the forest for the trees, but, you know, the betterment of football. I mean, I don't know. Is Notre Dame going to say, you know what, you're right. We're going to take some of that money we make off the NBC contract. We're going to throw that back in the kid. No, of course they're not.
No. Sankey and Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti, these are the two power players. Now, Petitti's not in Destin down there in Florida where they're having these meetings, but those are the two guys that have been leading the charge. They were leading the charge with how to reseed in the playoffs. They're leading the charge with expanding and how soon that may happen. They're leading the charge, Mike, when it comes to, hey, what's really important as we move forward with how we want to do business across the board. I mentioned this to our buddy Connor Riley, and he was on earlier. Great interview with him online at Odyssey.com. Guys, you got 136 FBS schools, and everybody's not going to survive. Because if this court thing goes through, and again, right. It has not yet, but if it is passed, I'm telling you right now, you're now talking about schools paying players. Everybody won't be able to do this. And some of these programs are going to go bye-bye. I don't know which ones, but this gets back to league sharing, Mike, and you talked about it. The revenue involved.
Right.
There's just a lot of stuff that they're trying to figure out as we move forward. And again, look, progress is great, but I think we move too fast on this. And that is why we are where we are.
Right.
Paying players is one thing, but then it was like, well, screw it. We'll just do it this way. And now everybody's like, holy crap, we gotta rethink right. this.
And we said this earlier. I mean, the only way – I'm arguing with some guys about, you know, strength of schedule with the SEC versus the Big 12. I mean, for instance, the only way the ACC ever pulls themselves out of the situation they're in is Brent Key wins 10 games. Clemson, you know, Clemson, they're off year. They lost to South Carolina. They lost a bunch of games. They still found a way to get in the playoffs. But Virginia Tech and Miami can't fade at the end. Florida State can't win two games.
Yeah.
The ACC's brand is crap right now. I'm sorry. We all pull for Brent Key. We all pull for Georgia Tech. Rising tide raised all the ships. We want to see these guys all get it together. But part of the reason they're saddled with that crappy ESPN contract is they're not viable like they were 20 years ago.
Yeah. And understand what I'm saying about, you know, somebody just said, who cares about these other schools? You're either with us or you're against us. And Tony Petitti, who runs the Big Ten, and Greg Sankey, who runs the SEC, in the eyes of these other schools, are trying to strong-arm them.
Right.
And a lot of these schools will not go for that. And that's going to get potentially Congress involved. And people look, there are people in Congress, whether you realize it or not, went to Notre Dame. They went to ACC schools. They went to Big 12 schools. Right. They're like, wait a minute, what are you doing to our conference? So that is why I'm saying they have to be very careful in how they go about this. That is at least the perception. You're not going to strong-arm us into doing what you guys want us to do. It needs to be best for everybody, and that is the argument right now that is going on. And I'm not saying that's just in Destin. That's across college football.
But again, you know, it's like, how did we – like, you could argue about how we got here, how we're going to fix it. I don't know. I mean, that's why, like, the Florida State and the Clemson lawsuits are kind of ridiculous, although when you're making the most ratings and generating the most revenue via TV, you should probably have a bigger piece of the pie.
Yes.
So the ACC is over a barrel. You know, why are things the way they are? Because John Swofford didn't see the future. He didn't try to expand. When the Big 12 started to expand, I'm sorry, when the Big 10 started to expand, and they threw an end around when they grabbed Washington
they
and
did.
USC and UCLA and Oregon. But, you know, the SEC, it started, you know, back all the way back with Arkansas and being big enough to think, oh, Texas and Oklahoma. Meanwhile, what's the ACC doing? They did this last-ditch stuff with what? With Stanford and SMU? You know, and good for SMU, they had a hell of a season last year. But it's too little too late. So we're going to get stuck. And again, and yes, Sankey is part of the problem. He's not right now part of the solution. We're going to get stuck with the top 50 or 60 teams. But I wonder what the hell happens to these other guys. Right? Do they play the Ivy League? Are we going to have two separate? I mean, are we going to have a sort of like the one division AA championship, the other guys, and then the college football playoff? And what are the guys in between make TV wise? No, they don't make anything.
No, they're not going to make it. They're going to be the haves and have nots. Now, we haven't gotten there yet, but these are the hard problems that they're going to have to try to solve. And by the way, they're not going to. I'm just here to tell you, like, you're not going to solve all these problems because you can't please everybody. So this gets back to the haves and have-nots who make the decisions. 404-726-0929. You guys can text us. Follow Mike, by the way. Mike Bell, ATL. I'm at Put 'em Up. See Dukes and the radio shows, Dukes and Bell 929. The games on Saturday will continue to be the games on Saturday. We're still going to watch Georgia-Auburn. Alabama comes to Georgia this year. It's going to be great. Texas comes in Athens this year. It's going to be great. But the fundamental problems that college football is facing is going to take a brain trust and a commitment to everybody involved to solve these issues. And if you don't, Mike, it's going to destroy what we've known as college football for the last 75 years.
Right. Now, listen to this. I just talked about ACC. Ross Dellinger tweeted this from Scott Strickland, the Florida AD.
Yes.
A committee is not ideal to choose a postseason. I question whether it's appropriate for college football.
There you go. See, and that's what I'm saying. Like, okay, so what do you want? Who's appointing these teams?
And Dan Walken, I don't always agree with Dan, but Dan's pretty funny. He goes, the moment you begin to realize that nothing will ever be good enough for these people.
Right, who do you want doing
right,
that?
Right.
Hey, man, more on this tomorrow. The SEC meetings continue. They started yesterday, but it's fascinating because everybody's like, we need this.
Right.
And then Greg Sankey's like, let me show you what I'm talking about. And then everybody says, oh, he's trying to flex. They're trying to bully us. Okay, I don't know about that, but they do have a lot of power, and I'm talking about the SEC. All right, we got to get out of the way, man. Turtles got the night show coming up. Dom's doing a great job today. Let's get out of here and clear our throat. Mike, who do you got tonight? Knicks, Pacers. Knicks tie this thing up?
What are the odds that Carl Anthony Towns can put two monster efforts back to back? Minnesota Timberwolves fans would say zero. But I don't know. As in Nick, though, it was a force of nature. We talked about it. If Indiana can get those transition points and those great open looks for Tyrese Halliburton, then I think they're in a good spot. But now I get a feeling this is definitely going 6 or 7.
I do, too. I feel that way. It's going to be a closer game. I don't think it'll be a blowout tonight. And now it becomes a grind. I think the Knicks might have found a formula, but Mike's right. It's got to be performances. Mm. Hey, Dom, great job. We're back at this thing tomorrow, 2 o'clock. Lots more to get to. A bunch of guests we'll have on the show as well. More on the Braves, man. I just want to win this series, but Strider's got to be Strider. At some point, you can't give us 4 2/3 and feel good about it. We got to see a good Strider outing tonight. We'll see what happens there, and we'll talk plenty about the Braves tomorrow and more on the OTAs with the Falcons up at Flowery Branch. If you missed it today, Kirk Cousins was not there. It is voluntary. Okay, you say no big deal. Then why show up at all to anything? All right, man. We got to roll. Mike Bell, clear your throat.
Hey, man. I took a shot at NASCAR last week saying, look, the Coke 600 is the world's most boring race. I've been to some of those that take like 5 hours to finish. This year, actually, it was faster than the Indy 500. They did have those long delays because of the rain up at Indy and yellow flags, et cetera, and guys that wrecked on the first lap before the race even started. But in the Charlotte race, they actually ran a couple minutes quicker. They didn't have a lot of yellows. Don't know if it was exciting. Ross Chastain won it, but still, it was actually shorter and faster than the Indy 500 this year.
Interesting. Hey, man, I don't know who it is in the clubhouse. I really don't even care who it is. Somebody's got to look other guys in the face with the Braves and say, you're not playing up to your capabilities. Mm. Can't be just snit all the time. The great teams have players inside of those clubhouses that are willing to do it. Listen, Manny Machado is that guy with the Padres. I'm here to tell you, he's not afraid to rattle feathers. And sometimes you need that. Our Braves across the board, we're okay. We're not living up to it. And certainly some of these guys are not playing up to their potential. Who's going to do it? You? Hey, if you love the show.
You tell your friends.
If you don't.
You don't know the correct response to boiler up.